listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
New Jersey moved a step closer to approving its first minimum wage increase in 6 years on Monday. The state Senate voted 26-10 in favor of raising the wage from the federal minimum of $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The 10 dissenting votes were all cast by Republicans who are concerned that the increase will cost the state jobs. Senate Democrats argue that increasing the wage is the only way to help New Jersey's working poor make ends meet. The wage will jump to $6.15 per hour in October 2005, followed by a second increase in October 2006. The minimum wage bill was proposed by acting New Jersey Governor Richard J. Cody during his State of the State address.
Organized labor supporting Bush on Bush's air pollution legislation, that unlikely occurrence is happening. Bill Cunningham of Unions for Jobs and the Environment says a group of union presidents from the United Mine Workers, Teamsters, Boilermakers, Electrical Workers, Utility Workers, and the Transportation Communications International Union are calling on Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee to back the Bush plan because Cunningham says it's a reasonable reduction of air pollution while still protecting jobs.
We're supporting the bill because it calls for rather dramatic reductions in pollutants and creates jobs at the same time. I don't know if you say that's in support of the Bush administration. Well, maybe you might say that, but basically we're calling for some rather dramatic reductions and think that's the responsible thing to do.
Environmental groups oppose Bush's plan, which includes allowing power plants that pollute to buy pollution credits from plants that have reduced emissions further than required. The Senate committee is expected to act on Bush's air pollution bill today.
Striking workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York are meeting today to hear a new contract offer. The Bargaining Committee for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Lodge 588, met with Garlock officials on Monday. An IAM representative says they came out of the meeting without some of the concessions workers want, but enough to justify a contract revote. The workers rejected the latest offer because they were unhappy with an 80-cent per hour pay cut, changes in benefits, elimination of sick days, and work shifts that could change weekly. Garlock officials have threatened to close the plant if concessions aren't met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new report in the journal Child Development, a mother's work schedule may have a major impact on her child's developmental skills. Half the mothers studied worked full-time but odd hours, such as evening or rotating shifts. The children of those mothers tend to perform much worse than children of mothers who work traditional daytime hours. The study speculates that because women who work daytime hours are more likely to enroll their children in daycare, that could have a major impact on the developmental rift.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
George W. likes to brag that he's a decisive leader. Well, yes, he is. And he is quite decisively leading our country right over a cliff with his Iraq policy. But Bush is now claiming that the November election has vindicated his war decisions, calling his win an accountability moment. Well, not exactly. In fact, large majorities of Americans are telling pollsters and Bush that they do not support his Iraq adventure. For real accountability, George might want to have a heart-to-heart with Dante Zappala, a Los Angeles teacher. Zappala has written an eloquent op-ed piece about his brother Sherwood, who died last year as a result of Bush's boneheaded decisiveness. Zappala recalls that the president told us that we must invade Iraq because Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction that threatened America's national security. Zappala's brother, a National Guardsman with a wife and 9-year-old son, was assigned to the team in Iraq looking for those non-existent weapons, even though the international inspectors had declared in January 2004 that there were no WMDs. W decisively insisted that they were there, so the search team was ordered to keep looking. 3 months later, Sherwood was killed while standing guard in the futile search for the weapons. Zappala's grieving family wept anew this January when the White House, with no fanfare, conceded that there were no WMDs and officially ended the search. They are anguished not by Sherwood's death alone, but for all who have died and will die because of the false assumptions of our so-called leaders who still will not come clean. Zapala writes, "The war with Iraq was not a mistake, but rather a flagrant abuse of power by our leaders and a case of shameful negligence by the rest of us for letting it happen." This is Jim Hightower saying, there's no accountability moment until Bush and our whole society can honestly answer Zapala's question, why did my brother die?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, Live 365's American FM station, and on cable radio network, going into cable TV systems in 29 states and with a web stream at cable radio network. Welcome to our program. Well, lots happening in the, I guess, you know, every day there's a lot. It's just there's, with the Bush administration, it's just a nonstop hit parade of outrages. Today, of course, the Kyoto Treaty went into effect. The Kyoto Global Warming Pact went into force Wednesday, that's today, 7 years after it was negotiated. It took a while because they had to have 55% of the world's carbon-producing total countries producing 55% of the world's carbon sign on. Russia finally signed on. Russia! Vladimir Putin providing moral leadership on this issue, but not the United States. The United States, which is the world's largest emitter of such gases, has said, nah, we're not going to do that. In fact, the top government spokesman for the country of Japan, Chief Cabinet Secretary Hirohiko Hosada, said, quote, "We have been calling on the United States to join, but the country that is the world's biggest emitter has not joined yet, and that is regrettable. We actually had joined, but 3 months after taking office in March of 2001, when George W. Bush was being warned that Al-Qaeda was planning to strike inside the United States, but Dick Cheney had not yet bothered to have even one single meeting of his counterterrorism task force. No, it did not meet until after 9/11, and Condi Rice was being warned in over 55 memos that she lied about before Congress, saying, oh, we had no idea that they were planning a spectacular suicide attack involving hijacked aircraft. That, by the way, could have been prevented if they had simply hardened cockpit doors. A recommendation that went back to the Clinton administration. Nobody wanted to push the airlines because they were concerned about corporate profits. In any case, while all of this is going on, George W. Bush instead said, it's far more important. We got to protect the profits of the oil and gas industry. George, of course, being a CEO from the oil industry. Dick Cheney being a CEO from the oil industry. Condi Rice has a tanker named after her. Hamid Karzai, the former consultant to the oil, which oil company is it? I'm mixing them up now. Anyhow, Hamid Unocal, former Unocal consultant, now running Afghanistan, the largest narco state in the world as of this moment. Anyhow, in March of 2001, Bush pulled the United States out of the Kyoto Pact 3 months after taking office. So we were a part of it. President Al Gore yesterday made remarks about this. And I quote from the man who legitimately should be president of the United States, did win Florida. Yes, it was reported in the New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, and media all across America a year after the fact. It took them that long to finally count the ballots because the Supreme Court put a stop to it as a result of a lawsuit by George W. Bush, who somehow hates trial lawyers if they're defending human beings, but not if they're helping him become president or defending corporations. In any case, Vice President Al Gore, former Vice President Al Gore, and I quote, "Unfortunately, we have seen over the last few years a decision on the part of the Bush White House to withdraw from the global process by which this crisis, that being the crisis of global warming, is being confronted. President Bush has instead directed the nation's attention and resources toward false crises while refusing to acknowledge a real crisis that is unfolding right before our eyes." He goes on to say, "Weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and the alleged need for privatizing Social Security are examples of false crises, but here's a real crisis staring him in the face. By the way, not just him, you and me and our children, and particularly our children and our grandchildren. A real, born and unborn, but here's a real crisis staring him in the face that desperately needs leadership from the President of the United States. And his financial supporters in the oil and coal industry don't want him to acknowledge the reality of the crisis, so he pretends it doesn't exist." Today, the Kyoto Treaty goes into effect everywhere in the world except the United States. So Arnold can still drive his Hummer. Also in the bad news department, maybe we should bring the music back up again. Just say no to extremist judges. I was going to get into this yesterday. We just ran out of time. By the end of the third hour, I still hadn't gotten to it. There's just so much stuff. This actually, you know, it's a story a couple days old, but it is really worth revisiting. It's not really so much a couple days old because it's going to carry on. And in fact, it's really a couple days new because Bill Frist and the Senate Republicans are still deciding whether or not to use the so-called nuclear option to say, no, we don't want no stinking filibuster. Let's just reverse the rules of forever. Amazing, amazing. By the way, Ira informs me the chat room is demanding your presence. Guys, I'm sorry. I ran in here to get on the air just moments before we started because interesting and late-breaking news out of Iran. Iran and Syria have just put together this access. We're going to probably get into it in our second hour. But I just, you know, there was so much stuff, and I haven't had, literally didn't have the 15 seconds it takes to log into the chat room. I will do it during the next break. I promise. I will be there. But, hey. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number. Harry Reid, the leader of the Democrats in the Senate, says, this was a day before yesterday, he said this, but as I said, this is the battle that has not really yet begun. But George Bush fired the opening shot. He says the president's at it again with extremist judges. Last year, the Senate worked to confirm 204 of the president's judicial nominees and rejected only the 10 most extreme. This confirmation record is better than that achieved by President Clinton, President George H.W. Bush, and President Reagan. Despite our unprecedented effort to work with the president in discharging our congressional duty to advise and consent to his nominees, today, he renominated 7 of the 10 rejected nominees. We should not divert attention from other pressing issues facing this nation to re-debate the merits of nominees already found too extreme by this chamber. To replay this narrow and completed debate demonstrates the Bush administration's failure to craft a positive agenda for the American people. Well, let's check out that agenda. First of all, it should be noted that President Bush has gotten a 97% confirmation rate. 97% of the people who have been nominated have been confirmed. 97% of his judges. 20% of the people that Clinton sent up were blocked by the Republicans in the last 6 years of his administration. Why? Well, obviously, the Republicans were hoping to take the White House in 2000. They already had the fix in with the voting machines in Georgia and a few other places, I am guessing. Prove to me it's not right. Tell me, please, why it is that the Republican leadership in the House and Senate will not even allow to come to the House floor or the Senate floor for a vote. Bills introduced and sponsored by members of both parties, by the way, but bills introduced in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. The one in the Senate, even by Hillary Clinton, maybe, well, no, that has nothing to do. In any case, bills that would require voting machines to produce a paper trail. Why is it the Republicans don't want this to happen? In fact, the state of Maryland, yesterday, news story came across. They want to pass a law saying that it's against the law to require a paper trail. Why? What's going on? In any case, they, for the last 6 years of the Clinton administration, as they were getting all this stuff in place, old Chuck Hagel, the former head of the voting machine company in Nebraska, resigns and decides to run for the Senate, and surprise, surprise, he wins on his own voting machines. As that's happening, they're blocking 20% of Clinton's nominees, and now they're complaining. They're complaining that 97% of Bush's nominees have been passed, a higher percentage than Reagan, than George Herbert Walker Bush, or than Clinton. And you've got these guys, these right-wing whiners on radio going, Congress,
they're obstructionists. They don't want, they're trying to block judicial nominee. They're trying to screw up our courts. They're trying to slow things down.
You could say that legitimately of the Republican-held Congress during the last 6 years of the Clinton administration. But the Democrats, frankly, in my opinion, have just been rolling over. They've been total wimps. Well, we'll see if they continue to be. Let me tell you about some of these folks. Carolyn Kuhl ruled that a woman with breast cancer has no right of privacy just because her doctor allowed a drug company salesman to watch her examination. Hey, check out the hooters on this one, he says. Well, he didn't say that, but the effect was the same. Janice Brown, who has referred to the New Deal as socialism and whose legal positions would, quote, seriously undermine legal protections against sexual harassment in the workplace. Claude Allen, a former aide to Senator Jesse Helms, noted for his famous statement that Helms' opponent was vulnerable because of his links, quote, with the queers. I mean, this just goes on and on and on. Civil liberties, William Haynes, principal author and defender of the administration's designation and handling of enemy combatants and denial of Geneva Convention protections. He actually helped produce, this is from People for the American Way, he actually helped produce torture and the torture and mistreatment of U.S. detainees in Iraq, Guantanamo Bay, and elsewhere. His writing helped this. He also publicly criticized those raising civil liberty questions in connection with these policies. Terrence Boyle, twice reversed by the U.S. Supreme Court in redistricting cases. Yeah, let's redistrict our way into power. David McKeague refused to permit the Justice Department to investigate possible abuses at two women's prisons. Pryor says the Constitution should not apply to reproductive choice, gay rights, and school prayer. Well, it just goes on and on. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone, and the sands will be shifting from my sight when I'm gone. Can add my name into the fight while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
Yes, indeed, we have to do it while we're here. We have to stand up. We have to speak out. We have to tell the truth. We have to recover, reclaim democracy, a government of, by, and for we the people, from the would-be aristocrats, plutocrats, kleptocrats
those who think that wealth and power is simply its own, you know, its own benefit, its own goal, its own end. Folks in the chat room reminding me, on Monday I had asked for your prayers on the air here for my father, who had had a heart attack Sunday night, or had apparently had a heart attack. He was taken to the hospital. He's back home. Thank you. I appreciate your prayers. He's scheduled for cancer surgery in 2 weeks. And he has mesothelioma, the cancer of the lungs caused by asbestos, exposure to asbestos, that George Bush, in his State of the Union address, said anybody suing over was frivolous. And also bladder cancer, which is what they're going to be operating on. So it's a tough time for him. So your prayers are appreciated. Back to the, well, actually, let's go to the phone call. The phone lines have been lit up almost ever since the show started. I appreciate you folks waiting patiently. Let's take a few phone calls and see what's on folks' mind here today. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartmann.com, by the way, the website, if you want to drop in the chat room. Jeff in Kentucky on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great show, as usual.
Thank you.
As with Kyoto, I looked at it. If you were unable to meet your target, it was more or less an extortion type thing. You'd have to pay money. I mean, they figure the U.S. has the most money. Chances of them making their targets are slim and none. It was a way for the third world to get money out of the United States.
Well, here's a question, Jeff. At what point does paying for the damage that you're causing become extortion, and at what point is it simply paying for the damage that you're causing?
Well, I look at it this way. With the United States, they have the technology to improve their lot. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I lived in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and I remember my father telling me we couldn't go fishing in the Cuyahoga because the river there, not because it was raining, not because it was cold, it's because the river was on fire.
Yeah, that I remember when that river caught on fire. I was a teenager when it happened.
That was the only way the American people really, really get upset about pollution. Like if there's a big fish kill,
yeah,
people get really upset. They want explanation. With Kyoto, I kind of figured that they'd drop out of it because it would have done a lot of damage to the American economy in the short term. Long term, I think it would have done well because a lot of people would have been into business stipends to try to,
That's the whole point that everybody's making, Jeff, is that Kyoto over the short term could have been a huge boom for the American economy. And there is discussion about this now in the international business press about, you know, in Finland and Denmark, for example, are pre-positioned for this. The Netherlands are getting on this thing. Russia's trying to figure out how to do it. I mean, there's just this explosion in technology, in number one, scrubbing technologies, you know, reclaiming carbon, and number two, alternative energy sources that don't emit carbon. It's a growth industry now.
The American public is addicted to cheap energy because, you know, I used to
run cheap oil. To cheap oil. I mean, there's lots of, there's plenty of cheap energy. It just pours down from the sun.
Well,
we're just not harvesting.
In Canada, for example, just in the tar pits up there,
yeah,
they have more oil than Saudi Arabia, but it costs more to refine.
Right, it's around $40 a barrel is the cost, and Saudi's is around $12, and Iraq's is around $1.50 right now.
Right, and then like when you were talking about those judges, I look at it this way: like Joe Lewis used to say, "You can run, but you can't hide." They, Mr. Bush is expected that within the next 4 years, Roe v. Wade better be overturned or the Republican Party is going to implode. I really believe that.
Yeah, I suspect you're right, Jeff. Jeff, I got to wrap it up. But, you know, George is paying off his base, shall we say, his financial base as well. And I'll give you the details on that right after this.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
New Jersey moved a step closer to approving its first minimum wage increase in 6 years on Monday. The state Senate voted 26 to 10 in favor of raising the wage from the federal minimum of $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The 10 dissenting votes were all cast by Republicans who are concerned that the increase will cost the state jobs. Senate Democrats argue that increasing the wage is the only way to help New Jersey's working poor make ends meet. The wage will jump to $6.15 per hour in October 2005, followed by a second increase in October 2006. The minimum wage bill was proposed by acting New Jersey Governor Richard J. Cody during his State of the State address.
Organized labor supporting Bush on Bush's air pollution legislation, that unlikely occurrence is happening. Bill Cunningham of Unions for Jobs and the Environment says a group of union presidents from the United Mine Workers, Teamsters, Boilermakers, Electrical Workers, Utility Workers, and the Transportation Communications International Union are calling on Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee to back the Bush plan because Cunningham says it's a reasonable reduction of air pollution while still protecting jobs.
We're supporting the bill because it calls for rather dramatic reductions in pollutants and creates jobs at the same time. I don't know if you say that's in support of the Bush administration. Well, maybe you might say that, but basically we're calling for some rather dramatic reductions and think that's the responsible thing to do.
Environmental groups oppose Bush's plan, which includes allowing power plants that pollute to buy pollution credits from plants that have reduced emissions further than required. The Senate committee is expected to act on Bush's air pollution bill today.
Striking workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York are meeting today to hear a new contract offer. The Bargaining Committee for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Lodge 588, met with Garlock officials on Monday. An IAM representative says they came out of the meeting without some of the concessions workers want, but enough to justify a contract revote. The workers rejected the latest offer because they were unhappy with an 80-cent per hour pay cut, changes in benefits, elimination of sick days, and work shifts that could change weekly. Garlock officials have threatened to close the plant if concessions aren't met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new report in the journal Child Development, a mother's work schedule may have a major impact on her child's developmental skills. Half the mothers studied worked full-time but odd hours, such as evening or rotating shifts. The children of those mothers tend to perform much worse than children of mothers who work traditional daytime hours. The study speculates that because women who work daytime hours are more likely to enroll their children in daycare, that could have a major impact on the developmental rift.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn the world into one big Texas.
And let me add, talking about prayer requests here. You know, I normally don't talk about this stuff. But I encourage you to pray for George W. Bush, too. If we don't, and that he will awaken, he and the others in his administration. We have to hold the whole world in our prayers these days. So enough about that, lest, you know, this... Plus, the radio station start calling up and saying, hey, if you're going to run Christian programming, you got to pay for it. Eddie, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Program. We're being progressive. Never felt so good. A beautiful, warm, gray day here in the People's Republic of Vermont. But clouds hold the heat in, which is a nice thing in February. Iris is on the way in today. He says it's t-shirt weather, or nearly. Now, t-shirt weather in Vermont means it's somewhere between 25 and 30. You know, but in any case. William Pryor urged the courts, this is another one of these right-wing cranks that George W. has resubmitted, urged the courts to uphold a judge's official sponsorship of sectarian prayers before juries. That is, he wanted a judge to require juries to pray to a particular religion. Okay, let's all pray to Reverend Moon. You think I'm kidding? Reverend Moon has paid George Herbert Walker Bush $100,000 a whack to give several speeches, has contributed millions to the Bush family, and owns, of course, bailed Jerry Falwell out with, as I recall, $300,000 when Liberty University was near bankruptcy. And, of course, owns the Washington Times. Tony Blankley, one of the leading Moonies on TV. I don't know if he's religiously a Moonie, but what do you call a guy who works for Reverend Moon? Anyhow, the Washington Times, the only newspaper in Washington, D.C. that George W. will read. So William Pryor says that the judge should have the right to force a jury to pray to Reverend Moon before they make a decision. Priscilla Owen consistently issues dissents favoring businesses and government over consumers. Her dissents have seriously impaired the rights of ordinary citizens to have access to the courts and obtain redress for a variety of injuries, including rape. Janice Rogers Browns dissented from protecting the rights of investors and other consumers, says state laws should be effectively disregarded. She's also argued that the Supreme Court should abandon its test for distinguishing between private and corporate speech. Do you get that? In other words, Janice Rogers Brown, one of these right-wing extremist judges that George W. wants nominated to the D.C. Circuit. Now, that's the First Circuit Court. The D.C. Circuit Court. The First Circuit is the one from which, more often than any other circuit, nominees for the United States Supreme Court are pulled. It is considered the stepping stone to the Supreme Court, the major stepping stone. She has argued that a corporation should have absolute free speech rights, which includes the right to lie. That a corporate right to lie should be constitutionally protected because corporations are persons and should have the protections of the First Amendment, just like you and me. The First Amendment that was put into place in a constitution that was written in the blood of our founders and framers to protect we the people from the British East India Tea Company, the world's largest multinational corporation, and its government sponsor, King George III, the largest stockholder in the British East India Company. This was the Boston Tea Party, the thing that kicked the whole thing off in the winter of 1773. They fought and died to get those amendments in place to protect human beings, not institutions. And here you have a judge who says, oh, no, corporations should have the absolute right to lie. No legal ramifications whatsoever. Henry Sod, renominated to the Sixth Circuit, has joined dissents in a number of cases harmful to the rights of consumers and injured plaintiffs. Many of them were subsequently reversed by the Michigan Supreme Court. He's repeatedly shown hostility to sexual harassment claims. Richard Griffin says striking workers who were being replaced by permanent employees were not harmed. He also erroneously found that replaced workers were not entitled to unemployment benefits under state law. This was reversed. Again, Judge Janice Rogers Brown, this is the one who thinks that corporations should have free speech rights. She said her approval of broad on-the-job drug testing, even in situations in which the majority are weeks old, because it takes a while for Google to update itself. Yeah.
Exactly. And also, did you notice during the debate that Bush didn't say, like, quote, one Bible verse, where it's carried across?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. It started with Ronald Reagan. It is the rise of corporate power taking over government. This is what Teddy Roosevelt warned us about. It's what Franklin Roosevelt talked about. Andrew Jackson, I mean, this is nothing new. In 1829, Andrew Jackson's first State of the Union address, in fact, we can make this our quote for the day, although I've got another one, de Tocqueville's. But Andrew Jackson said, in this point of the case, the question is distinctly presented whether the people of the United States are to govern through representatives chosen by their unbiased votes or whether the money and power of a great corporation is to be secretly exerted to influence their judgment and control their decisions.
Oh, see, that's cool.
1829, President Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, it's funny how they have the foresight to see just such tragic things, and we that are living it. It's kind of like that frog that's in a pot, you know.
Yep, yep.
You know, they sit
there. Dan Quinn's frog.
You know, they're not even paying attention, and we're going to die or get severely damaged because of this.
Yeah, yeah. It's been getting hotter and hotter.
Since corporations are supposed to be as people, don't you think they should, like, after 65 years, like we do, retire?
Exactly. And Dave, I got to move along, but you raise a really good point that, in fact, for the first 100 years in America, corporations could not exist more than 40 years. Every 40, in some states, it was 20 or 30 years. It varied from state to state. At the time of the Civil War, there were fewer than 2,000 corporations in all of America, and most of them were created, like the Erie Canal Corporation, for public works projects. I mean, people had small businesses. They didn't use the corporate form. It's a relatively recent thing. I mean, John Rockefeller really raised this thing up, and they figured, hey, 40 years and out, you got to redistribute the wealth. It's a sort of a variation on the Jubilee idea. Rick in Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, first of all, good luck to your dad. That's the first time I heard about that.
Thank you.
And I appreciate your comment there about Vladimir Putin showing some moral leadership here. I remember a conversation I had with a friend of mine way back in the 60s. I said, do you think we'll ever live long enough to see the time when maybe the United States will be the bad guys and the Russians the good guys? I don't think we're quite there yet. But
no, in fact, Putin is sliding backwards so fast it's scary. He's the former head of the KGB, and it's showing. It's showing.
So we're not quite there yet, but
no,
I don't like the trends in this country. But anyway, I was wondering if you saw that news report that there was some explosion near an Iranian nuclear facility today?
Yeah, I did. I did. And they're still debating what caused it. And Iran is trying to say, well, maybe we dropped a fuel tank off one of our airplanes. And I never, you know, I'm a pilot and not a commercial pilot. I'm a private pilot. But I have never in my life seen an airplane that was built with an external fuel tank that you could discharge, that you could jettison. So,
well, you know,
I'm confused.
I have no use for those governments in the Middle East like Syria and Iran and Libya and all the rest. But I do wonder, with all this saber rattling going on, am I being too conspiratorial? What with the assassination of this fellow in Lebanon and now this? I mean, could the CIA or the Mossad be stirring things up there?
Well, in fact, I've got that in my stack. I mean, the Arab press is all buzzing that Israel killed the guy. The other side, you know, our press is all buzzing that the Syrians had something to do with it, because this guy was an opponent of the Syrians. The Syrians have 14,000 troops in Lebanon, and they argue that they're doing in Lebanon what the British have been doing in Northern Ireland, that they're basically keeping the peace, that, you know, after a civil war.
Well,
that they would be pleased to pull those troops out if the Lebanese government asked them to. In fact, that was in today's paper, that quote.
You find that ironic, though? Somebody said the Syrian troops don't belong in Lebanon. That's an occupation.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be there. I agree, but isn't there some other country occupying a country in the Middle East right now?
Yeah. Good point, Rick. Good point. I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Spike in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Spike, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Great to talk to you as usual.
Thank you.
My father actually has asbestos lung damage like yours, so even though I'm not a very religious person, certainly you have my best wishes for your father.
Thank you.
He did a great job at raising one of the most brilliant minds in liberal talk radio these
days. Well, he's a brilliant mind himself, and I don't want to drag too much of my personal life into the show, but I said that on Monday, and I had to, you know, wrap it up because I've been getting emails from people going, you know, well, how's everything, and so I also don't want to embarrass my father by talking about him on the radio. So, but thank you for your sentiments.
Real quick, there's been a story that's been kind of popping up about Oregon, I guess, that started it, and now California wants to do it, where they charge you. They put a GPS system to monitor where you drive.
Yeah, nobody's actually done it. Everybody's talking about doing it.
Yeah, I certainly, as a liberal, have a lot of big problems about that. That first of all, they want to punish people like me who own an Echo, which is good on gas.
Right. Yeah, I want a Prius, the same thing. The easy way to do this, and it wouldn't require all this fancy technology, is if they want to charge by the mile, is to simply say every year when you renew your car registration, you've got to tell them what your odometer setting is, or when you get your car inspection, and you pay based on the odometer. But still, as I agree with you, people are being paid for having fuel-efficient cars. They're being penalized.
And the Hummer owners are going to get off easy because they'll end up paying less taxes.
And guess who's supporting the legislation? It's
Arnold.
There you go. It's the Republicans. 10 minutes before the hour. Thanks, Spike.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
In some parts of the world, a shortage of protein leads to an abundance of poaching. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People and wildlife are suffering from severe overfishing in the waters of West Africa. Researchers say the fishery has been depleted as a result of overexploitation, and people can no longer rely on fish to get cheap protein into their diets. People are turning to animal meat as a replacement, and they're getting it by poaching in wildlife reserves. Justin Prechers is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish populations off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. Ghana is on Africa's Atlantic coast, and people there have depended on fish for generations. Prechers says the importance of this fishery stretches from the Atlantic coast to the edge of the Sahara Desert.
It's actually when you get much further inland, in some cases even into sub-desert or desert communities, hundreds, in some cases 1,000 miles from the coast, where you realize that it's these smoked or dried fish, particularly these small sardines and anchovy-type things, that are the primary source of animal protein. And they're the cheapest. They're still, despite the cost of getting these fish transported all the way out to these villages in the middle of nowhere, they're still the cheapest source of animal protein around.
Prechers says this source of protein and economic livelihood is disappearing because of overfishing. He says people all over West Africa are now hunting in game reserves to get protein from meat. His work shows that hunting has been hard on herds of wild animals that include elephants, lions, and leopards. Prechers published his findings last November in the journal Science. He says these problems occur around the world, and we need to find new ways to give people cheap protein that doesn't come from fish or other animals in the wild. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
¶¶
is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, I was in the car and I heard this guy. He sounded all shook up and he told me why. His voice was a shaking on the EIB. Sounded like an Oxycontin eater to me. It was a bug-eyed, tone-deaf, flying Oxycontin eater.
Right-wing syndicated, spinning liberal people beater.
Right-wing, strung-out, hypocrite, prescription cheater. Rush looked strange to me.
That guy! Yeah, God bless him. Rush Limbaugh does great talk radio.
I heard him say,
even if he does love Oxycontin.
I tried to quit twice, but it was just too tough.
He was a big mouth, blowhard, right-wing propaganda reader.
What can I say? You know, he's my competition, but, what can I say? In fact, I'm not even going to go there. 1-866-889-8894. Armin and but thanks for the bumper music, Louise. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin.
I've concluded, in my opinion, Tom, that politics has come full circle in this country as far as Washington goes in most of the states.
Where'd the circle start?
Well, money.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Corruption. And basically what it is, for all practical purposes, this is my opinion, is it's 100% image and 100% corrupt. And the only question left that I think best describes it is when you vote or anything you do almost, is you have to ask yourself between the choices you get, how do you want the rich that's getting richer? How do you want them to steal from you?
Well, unfortunately, with the Republican control and even to a large extent with Democrats in power, I mean, you look at some of these votes, they're just astounding, where you've got just a very small number of Democrats willing to stand up to these things.
Well, look at the page.
You know, that's the case. But it doesn't have to be the case, Armin. It doesn't have to be the case.
No, I agree with you.
If we can wake up enough people. Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you.
This is my observation. Simplistic description of where we're at politically.
Right. Do you want them to steal from you overtly or covertly? Do you want them to do it exactly.
How do you, what's left?
Hey, here's a question for you, Armin, just a quick question for you. I'm wondering your thoughts on this, and we've only got a few seconds left, as you know. This idea of pay by the mile, and let's put GPS systems in cars, when it would be so easy to simply say, okay, you got to have your car inspected every year, tell us what your odometer says and pay a tax based on that, and that's the cost of your examination of your car. Would you think that they might be doing the GPSs as part of a Big Brother thing to keep track of us all?
Oh, you mean the Patriot Act was really to protect us?
Yeah. This is like the remnants of, you know, when I was 13 and I read None Dare Call It Treason by John Stormer and went to a John Birch Society meeting, I'm starting to think that maybe in some of those things those guys said was right. It's
you know what
scary.
They want to do? These people are so vile and capable, they want to put a meter on the slave's treadmill.
There you go. Well said. Thanks a lot, Armin. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
New Jersey moved a step closer to approving its first minimum wage increase in 6 years on Monday. The state Senate voted 26 to 10 in favor of raising the wage from the federal minimum of $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The 10 dissenting votes were all cast by Republicans who are concerned that the increase will cost the state jobs. Senate Democrats argue that increasing the wage is the only way to help New Jersey's working poor make ends meet. The wage will jump to $6.15 per hour in October 2005, followed by a second increase in October 2006. The minimum wage bill was proposed by acting New Jersey Governor Richard J. Cody during his State of the State address.
Organized labor supporting Bush on Bush's air pollution legislation, that unlikely occurrence is happening. Bill Cunningham of Unions for Jobs and the Environment says a group of union presidents from the United Mine Workers, Teamsters, Boilermakers, Electrical Workers, Utility Workers, and the Transportation Communications International Union are calling on Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee to back the Bush plan because Cunningham says it's a reasonable reduction of air pollution while still protecting jobs.
We're supporting the bill because it calls for rather dramatic reductions in pollutants and creates jobs at the same time. I don't know if you say that's in support of the Bush administration. Well, maybe you might say that, but basically we're calling for some rather dramatic reductions and think that's the responsible thing to do.
Environmental groups oppose Bush's plan, which includes allowing power plants that pollute to buy pollution credits from plants that have reduced emissions further than required. The Senate committee is expected to act on Bush's air pollution bill today.
Striking workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York are meeting today to hear a new contract offer. The Bargaining Committee for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Lodge 588, met with Garlock officials on Monday. An IAM representative says they came out of the meeting without some of the concessions workers want, but enough to justify a contract revote. The workers rejected the latest offer because they were unhappy with an 80-cent per hour pay cut, changes in benefits, elimination of sick days, and work shifts that could change weekly. Garlock officials have threatened to close the plant if concessions aren't met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new report in the journal Child Development, a mother's work schedule may have a major impact on her child's developmental skills. Half the mothers studied worked full-time but odd hours, such as evening or rotating shifts. The children of those mothers tend to perform much worse than children of mothers who work traditional daytime hours. The study speculates that because women who work daytime hours are more likely to enroll their children in daycare, that could have a major impact on the developmental rift.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The media payola scandal keeps growing. First, it was Armstrong Williams, the right-wing commentator who got caught taking $240,000 from the Department of Education to shill for Bush's No Child Left Behind education law. Just a bad apple, said the powers that be, an aberration in an otherwise honest system. But now comes news that Maggie Gallagher, another right-wing commentator, has pocketed some $40,000 from the government to shill for Bush's Strengthening Marriage program. Both Williams and Gallagher have been roundly castigated for so crassly thumbing their noses at journalistic ethics. But wait a minute. It takes two to play the payola game, the corruptors as well as the corruptees. What we have here is Bush and company routinely and cynically using your and my tax dollars to use the media to propagandize you and me. Where's the accountability for these corruptors? Which agency officials are diverting our tax funds into propaganda? Which Bush operative devised this system? And why aren't all of these Bushites being publicly castigated and fired? George now says his government will no longer pay journalists. Thanks for small favors, but that's only a tiny piece of the Bushite propaganda machine. Even more corrupt is their surreptitious deployment of VNRs, video news releases, which are prepackaged news stories prepared by Bush officials to praise his policies. These ready-to-air pieces are narrated by actors posing as reporters. They are broadcast on hundreds of TV stations, reaching millions of households. You've seen them on your local TV news, but you wouldn't know it because they never mention that these reports come from the government itself. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop Bush's covert propaganda program, call the Center for Media and Democracy, 608-260-9713.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Democracy, freedom, liberty, justice, government of, by, and for we the people, as Abe Lincoln said, may it never perish from this earth. In the form of, by, and for we the people. However, under the guise of a provision to create jobs, if you remember this new law that was passed, this was a few months ago. I reported on it when it was first passed. In fact, there was a wonderful laudatory story about it, positive story about it in the Wall Street Journal. That was my source, and I shared that with you a few months ago. And it's called the American Jobs Creation Act. And it passed the U.S. House by 280 to 141 and the Senate by 69 to 17. This is where I said, we've got some Democrats that are just as bad as some of the Republicans. 69 to 17. And there's what, 47 or 48? 48, I believe. 47. I'm not sure how many Democrats in the Senate anymore. Since the last election, I haven't done a count, but maybe 46. But anyhow, But 17 of the Democrats voted with the Republicans on this thing. 141 of the Democrats in the House voted on this thing, presumably Democrats. 280 was the total that voted. Let me start this over. Only 17 Democrats voted against it. And only 100 in the Senate. And only 141 in the House voted against it. Passed by 280 to 141 in the House, 69 to 17 in the Senate. And it's called, as I said, the American Jobs Creation Act. The Bush administration, the Republican Party, have been reading very carefully George Orwell's 1984, which I don't believe students in America have been required to read in high school since probably the 1970s. I know back in the 60s when I was in high school, we had to read it. But I'll bet you it is not on anybody's required list anymore. Because if it were, you'd have a whole lot of different kind of folks, a lot of different kinds of phone calls coming into the right-wing talk shows from young people right now. Anyhow, so the whole theory of this thing was to create jobs, right? It's called the U.S. Job Creation Act, the American Jobs Creation Act. Well, what did this act do? It said that if a corporation makes profit overseas, instead of paying 35% corporate tax on it, like you do on profits you make in the United States, you only have to pay 5.25% tax on it. It was a one-year exemption so the corporations could bring home all these profits that they were accumulating in their overseas divisions. Bush, of course, will now say, well, let's make this permanent. It could be a $500 billion hit to the revenues of the government.
which means he'll have to figure out more ways to force state and local governments to jack up the taxes on average folks like you and me. But here we have the taxes go down to 5.25%. The Wall Street Journal estimates as much as $750 billion in profits will now be taxed at 5.25% instead of 35%. And who's going to benefit from this? Exxon, General Electric, IBM. These three companies will get about $20 billion each. The pharmaceutical companies are making out like bandits. Eli Lilly, $9.5 billion. Johnson & Johnson, $14.8 billion. Pfizer, $38 billion. Merck, $18 billion. Get to bring this money home. See, the way it was sold to Congress and to the news media was, if we let these corporations bring this money home, they'll use it to create jobs here. And nobody said, wait a minute, let me get this right. If we tell corporations that they make profits overseas, they have to pay a lower, they can pay a lower tax rate on that money that they make overseas than on the money that they make here. And that's going to cause them to want to create jobs here? I mean, are you seriously telling me that? I mean, just imagine somebody called you up and said, hey, I understand you're running a business. And, you know, your corporate tax rate is 35%. If you move your manufacturing facility to China, you'll only have to pay a 5.25% tax rate on your profits. And we're just sure that that's going to encourage you to make more, to create more jobs in America, isn't it? I'm telling you, the Republicans have been they have been drinking the Kool-Aid that Jim Jones was passing out before he started passing out the deadly stuff. They've been spending too much time with Reverend Moon. In fact, the American Jobs Creation Act does not require that a single job be created. And now the corporations are starting to announce how they're going to use these profits, these extra revenues that they're getting from this reduction in their taxes from bringing home their profits, their foreign profits. What are we finding? Hewlett Packard, which is sitting on $14 billion overseas, pushed really hard to have this thing. They spent a lot of money lobbying for this law. In the last 3 years, they cut 25,000 jobs, and they announced last week that they intend to continue cutting jobs in the United States. Oracle Corporation has $3 billion overseas. What are they going to use that money for? They're going to use it to acquire PeopleSoft. What's that going to do? Well, they've already announced merging the two companies. They're going to lay off 5,000 people. Not only that, the American Jobs Creation Act says that if you're a manufacturer, your standard rates of tax go down from 35 to 32% and down to 29% in 2007. Starbucks has been defined as a manufacturer. $10 billion fund was created for tobacco farmers, 20 other tax breaks to agricultural concerns. Other specific incentives for wholesale distributors of distilled liquor, NASCAR owners, and high-income individuals. Yes, we'll make you a little richer. Please create a job. No, don't invest that money in a bond or buying the stock of an existing corporation. Instead, go out and start a company. I'm telling you, it absolutely astounds me. For years, these guys on the radio and on TV and if you give the rich more money, they will create factories and they will create jobs here in America. So let's give the rich more money. I'm telling you, the reason why entrepreneurs, the reason why businesses create jobs is because there's demand for their products. It has nothing to do with how rich they are. I have started 7 corporations in my life, none of them huge. The largest one employed 35 people. But I'll tell you, every single one, I never started any of them with more than a few thousand bucks. In fact, the first two we started with borrowed money. I started my first business with my unemployment check, of all things. This is back in 1973. And why did I start those businesses? Because I had an idea for a product that I thought people would buy. There was a demand in the marketplace, and I believed that I could meet that demand, and I successfully did that. It had nothing to do with some Republican coming along and saying to me, "Hey, Tom, here's $100,000. Go start a business." I'll tell you, somebody hands you $100,000 or $1 million or $10 million or $500 million, whatever. What, are you going to take a chance and start a business? Unless you've got a really good idea. And if you've got a really good idea, if you know this product is, there's a market for it, people are going to buy it, there's an unfilled market, if you know that, you don't need anybody to give you money to start that business. You can find venture capitalists who will fund it. You can find private investors. You can borrow it from the bank. If you believe in it, you can do as I have done twice in my life, and you can mortgage your home to start your business. And if you succeed, as, you know, thank God, knock on wood, as I've done in all but one of my businesses, you can make a little money and eventually, you know, sell out. And what I, you know, what Louise and I have done, build them up, sell them off, take a year or two off. What we did with our time, we built a hospital in Uganda, and community for abused kids in New Hampshire. And I mean, you know, that was our fun. Other people take a cruise around the world for a year, whatever. Then we run out of money and have to start another business. But none of it had to do with incentives. It had to do with saying, hey, there's a need for what we can produce. Owners of small aircraft are going to receive a 50% bonus depreciation credit. Gee, who's that going to help? As I said, I'm a private pilot. It's been a lot of years, though, since I fly. I used to have a business that had enough money that we could fly a lot. In addition, not any, you know, it's been years, though. My physical is, I haven't taken a flight physical in a decade. In addition, broad-based stock options have been excluded from payroll taxes. Yes, let's just pass out more money to all these folks. This is just amazing. Now, where I'm going with this? The juxtaposition of this. Halliburton contracts in Iraq. The White House turning the tables on former American prisoners of war. Big Bush donors promised ambassadorships. And in the front page of the Wall Street Journal today, after a year of frenzied deals, two telecom giants emerge. Get this. This is an article by Elmore Latour. With Verizon Communication Inc.'s agreement to buy MCI Inc., a convulsive round of mergers in the nation's telecommunications industry has created a crescendo after $100 billion of deals over the past year. There are now two juggernauts standing astride the industry, Verizon and SBC. Both were created out of the local phone companies born back during the 1984 breakup of AT&T. So that was back when they used to enforce the laws against monopolies. Now, after two decades, this is, you know, ever since Reagan, now after two decades of building back up amid rapid changes in technology, they boast nationwide reach and every flavor of modern communication, local, long distance, wireless, internet, and if their plans bear fruit, television. For consumers, the long-awaited convergence, yes, we've been really waiting for this, of all communications and media into digital form is bringing the prospect of a single company providing everything via one high-speed pipe into their homes. And they want that single company to be free from regulation. And I got to tell you what that's going to mean. Well, for example, here in Vermont, where we've got a little local company, Sovereignet, provides our telephone services. You call into our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. You're calling in on Sovereignet, this little local Vermont company. These guys want to eat them like a bug, squash them like a bug, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go.
Oh, no.
The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow.
Yeah,
it's
Afghanistan now.
Troops, it's back today. Only goes to show.
The opium crop in Afghanistan this year, the largest in the history of the world. Heroin is at the lowest prices in Europe and the United States it has ever been. There is an epidemic of heroin addiction. Speaking with one of our kids the other day, and she was telling us about a friend of hers who they just, you know, he just went into rehab for heroin addiction. I mean, this is serious, serious stuff. The consequences of our foreign policy. Time for our report from Washington, D.C. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Ellen.
Hi. Well, the beat goes on. As you know, my friend Joel Heffley, conservative, who was chairman of the Ethics Committee, got fired by Tom DeLay and was replaced by Representative Doc Hastings, a good buddy of Tom DeLay.
We should tell people that Joel got fired because he was, even though he was Republican, he was interested in ethics on the Ethics Committee.
That's right. He's actually he's a very conservative guy and one of the most ethical people I know. He's been on with Doug and me on our radio little Washington beat for 12 years every week.
Yeah, on the Doug Steffen Show.
I know him really well.
Yeah.
And today, Chairman Hastings, the new chair, fired two members of the committee's professional staff, and so that's what they're doing. I mean, they're even taking away the line staffers.
So, see, I raised this yesterday, and it almost gives me chills. It almost horrifies me to talk about it. But in the Soviet Union, I visited the Soviet Union. In fact, we helped create a program in Russia for orphan kids and an agricultural demonstration project in Kaliningrad. After the fall of the Soviet Union, but I'd been there before the fall of the Soviet Union. And
so had I.
Yeah. Okay. Then you know the government of the USSR was not run by the USSR. It was run by the party. There was one party, and that party ran everything. And if you weren't loyal to the party and you didn't dance to the tune of the party, you were toast. And it is increasingly looking to me like the government of the United States, between the purge by Republican hack Porter Goss of the CIA, getting rid of, you know, professionals who are not party affiliated, and replacing them with partisan hacks in the CIA. Now here
The Ethics Committee.
The Ethics Committee. Thank you. I kept thinking Foreign Affairs. The Ethics Committee and on and on, these guys have in mind is single party rule. And it's like the party rules. It's not like the government rules.
That's true.
And that's terrifying. I mean, that is Stalinism.
You're right. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, well, thank you for validating the fact that I'm not nuts.
I mean, these people make me nuts. Okay,
that's
one of the things.
Yeah, so we got to
Alan Greenspan was on the, he's the Fed chairman, for anybody who doesn't know that.
Yep.
And he was on Capitol Hill today. He backed the Social Security personal accounts, but he said that he wants to do it in a cautious, gradual way. And it looks like the Republicans are trying to pick off the Democrats on this issue. They're trying to go after Tom Carper of Delaware, Nebraska Senator Ben Nelson, Louisiana's Mary Landrieu, Mark Pryor, and Bill Nelson of Florida.
You mean use it as a wedge issue to destroy their reelection chances?
No, to try and get them, well, maybe, but to try and put whatever pressure they can to get them to come over.
Oh, to get them to vote.
Well, that's five votes. So unless if the Republicans vote en masse for it, that would be the votes that they need to
get it through the Senate.
Get it voted on.
Yeah,
exactly.
The Senate, yeah. And the House is a no-brainer. Amazing. Well, thank you very much, Ellen, for the
you're very welcome.
For the distressing news. It's always great to hear from you. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
New Jersey moved a step closer to approving its first minimum wage increase in 6 years on Monday. The state Senate voted 26 to 10 in favor of raising the wage from the federal minimum of $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The 10 dissenting votes were all cast by Republicans who are concerned that the increase will cost the state jobs. Senate Democrats argue that increasing the wage is the only way to help New Jersey's working poor make ends meet. The wage will jump to $6.15 per hour in October 2005, followed by a second increase in October 2006. The minimum wage bill was proposed by acting New Jersey Governor Richard J. Cody during his State of the State address.
Organized labor supporting Bush on Bush's air pollution legislation, that unlikely occurrence is happening. Bill Cunningham of Unions for Jobs and the Environment says a group of union presidents from the United Mine Workers, Teamsters, Boilermakers, Electrical Workers, Utility Workers, and the Transportation Communications International Union are calling on Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee to back the Bush plan because Cunningham says it's a reasonable reduction of air pollution while still protecting jobs.
We're supporting the bill because it calls for rather dramatic reductions in pollutants and creates jobs at the same time. I don't know if you say that's in support of the Bush administration. Well, maybe you might say that, but basically we're calling for some rather dramatic reductions and think that's the responsible thing to do.
Environmental groups oppose Bush's plan, which includes allowing power plants that pollute to buy pollution credits from plants that have reduced emissions further than required. The Senate committee is expected to act on Bush's air pollution bill today.
Striking workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York are meeting today to hear a new contract offer. The Bargaining Committee for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Lodge 588, met with Garlock officials on Monday. An IAM representative says they came out of the meeting without some of the concessions workers want, but enough to justify a contract revote. The workers rejected the latest offer because they were unhappy with an 80-cent per hour pay cut, changes in benefits, elimination of sick days, and work shifts that could change weekly. Garlock officials have threatened to close the plant if concessions aren't met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new report in the journal Child Development, a mother's work schedule may have a major impact on her child's developmental skills. Half the mothers studied worked full-time but odd hours, such as evening or rotating shifts. The children of those mothers tend to perform much worse than children of mothers who work traditional daytime hours. The study speculates that because women who work daytime hours are more likely to enroll their children in daycare, that could have a major impact on the developmental rift.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger. He come around up to no good, broke the old treaties 'cause he could. Struts all around like a hood, got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
Yes, welcome back. Yes, we'll all feel better. But it unfortunately, it ain't going to happen. We have another 3.5 years of this to put up with. However, if the Democratic Party, can manage to take back the House or the Senate, or both, ideally, in the 2006 elections, then some of the over 50 major scandals and crimes associated with this administration may begin to come to light. Things that would make, you know, Watergate or you know, anything Bill Clinton did, but even Watergate, look like a small-time burglary. But I digress. Back to the telecommunications stuff. Alan Murray wrote an interesting op-ed piece in today's Wall Street Journal. Of course, the front page story, you know, after a year of frenzied deals, two telecom giants emerge. And this is really meta to the larger story, which is the consolidation of corporate power in America, replacing the power of we the people in the halls of Congress. And even at a local level. I mean, here in this little state of Vermont, I'm broadcasting here from the capital city, and the lobbyists for the huge multinational corporations prowl the halls of the little state of Vermont and push through legislation to benefit their interests. It's a tough one. So anyhow, as I shared with you a little bit of this article by Almar Latour in the front page of today's Wall Street Journal about this merger, and he notes, people familiar with the matter say Qwest now plans to reach out to Bell South Corporation, the third largest phone company, and BT Group PLC, the UK carrier. In other words, we may end up with one corporation running the whole thing. Now, then, of course, the sidebar story by Anne-Marie Squeo, again in the Wall Street Journal. Regulators must now weigh two tangled telecom deals. And she notes if both deals are approved, that essentially will create a situation in which there are just two choices for many customers, a shrinking of competition that antitrust officials generally frown on. Well, antitrust officials in administrations other than the Bush administration or the Reagan administration. And even to some extent the Clinton administration, although the mergers and acquisition mania did slow down after Reagan left office, you will recall. But anyhow, this Congressman Joe Barton, according to Alan Murray's column in business column in today's Wall Street Journal, he says Barton is working on rewriting the telecommunications law. He and his staff are busily working to rewrite the nation's telecommunications laws. Well, first of all, I'd say if Alan Murray really and truly believes that Congressman Joe Barton is busily working of Texas is busily working on rewriting the laws, he's misinformed. I'll be kind. The telecommunications industry is busy rewriting the laws and suggesting to Joe Barton what they should be. I have no proof of that other than the fact that the majority of legislation introduced into Congress these days is coming from corporate sources, and common sense would indicate it. Not to mention the fact that these folks have been advertising on TV. You know, hey, we're moving to the 21st century. We've got to change our telecom laws to conform. Yes. Well, as Alan Murray notes, a central aim of that bill would be to ease the significant regulatory burdens that fall on the baby bells. Currently, local phone companies have to share their networks with potential rivals at state-mandated prices. See, here's how it works. There is one street that runs in front of the building from which I am broadcasting. One street. And that street is the... I mean, we're not on a corner, so there's not two streets, right? Most buildings are on, you know, they have one street in front of them. And that street is the right-of-way into which are inserted telephone poles. In some communities, they're buried underground, but in most places, it's telephone poles. Go back to the old telegraph poles. And on those telephone poles are the wires that carry the electricity to the various buildings and that carry the phone lines and that carry the cable lines. And so what we the people have said to the telephone company, for example, what we the people here in Vermont said, for example, to the telephone company, Verizon, I believe, is the company here in Vermont. If you're going to own these wires, if you're going to put in this copper, that's fine. You can invest in that. And you can make a good profit on it. And you can be in that marketplace. But you are using the public right-of-way. You are making a profit off something that we all collectively own. And so we want to make sure that at the very least, the environment here in which this operates, that you operate, has some competitive nature left to it. And since those telephone poles will not be able to carry 40 or 50 different sets of wire, you know, of copper pairs, and in fact, in much of the United States, the copper was not actually paid for by the phone companies. It was paid for by government in the first place. This was the extension. Much of the electricity in the country. It was first put in under the REA, the Rural Electrification Act, by Roosevelt. And then in the 40s, I believe it was under Harry Truman. It might have been under Dwight Eisenhower in the early 50s. This was extended to telephone service, to take telephone service into rural areas or into small towns where it wouldn't be profitable for one of the big corporations to come. It was paid for by government. And the rights of way to this day are maintained by government. Okay. So we said to Verizon, for example, that's true all over. Your copper wires, but there has to be some way that there can be competition here. So you have to rent those wires to smaller phone companies if they want, at a price that we the people of the state, we will look at your books and we'll say, okay, you can make a profit at this and somebody can compete with you. And that somebody, and there's a couple of them, there's a bunch of them here in Vermont. The one that I'm using is a little company called Sovernet. And Sover, as in Vermont, used to be a sovereign republic. That's where they get the name from. And the Sovereign Republic of Vermont, before we joined the Union. And Sovernet rents pieces of that copper, of Verizon's copper, and transmits phone data over it. And they do it at very competitive prices. The price, frankly, is not that different. The price between Sovernet and Verizon, you know, they all have different plans. Sovernet's is much simpler. But what I like about Sovernet is when I pick up the phone and I dial for the tech help, I don't get somebody in India. I get somebody literally 5 miles away from me. Whereas when I have called the big phone company's tech support number, I have gotten people in India. And I just kind of like the idea that my dollars are going to support a company here in my state and to provide jobs in my state. I just like that. I would even pay extra for that. Although, actually, I think I'm paying a little less. Well, the big phone companies now want to say, no, we want to take all the copper. See, the cable companies have already essentially done this, by the way. This battle has already been won by the cable companies. This was part of, as I recall, this was part of Bill Clinton's giveaway to the cable companies with the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And the trade-off there was, they said to the cable companies, okay, if you're going to use the public right away, you're going to have to provide public access. And that's why you've got public access channels on your cable. It's their way of giving back to the community. But you can't have public access telephone service. So what do? You allow competition. Phone companies don't like that. And as Alan Murray notes in his column in today's Wall Street Journal, he says, but now suddenly the long-distance companies are no more. I don't think most people have even noticed what's going on here. He says all the money and clout AT&T and MCI have thrown into the battlefield in the past either goes away or gets deployed on the side of the baby bells. Joe Barton, the congressman, he says, we don't have that fight anymore. Alan Murray points out, while competition promises to keep prices down and service up for the 26% of U.S. households that are now on the broadband network, reduced competition and less regulation could mean higher prices for those who rely on traditional telephone services. What a surprise! If one company comes to own all the phone service in a community and they can lock out any competitors, they might raise prices. Aren't you just surprised? Aren't you just shocked? Alan Murray goes on, Verizon, SBC, and their smaller siblings, Bell, SouthCorp, and Qwest Corporations International, argue that they simply want a level playing field. They say they're saddled with a host of taxes and regulatory burdens that the cable companies don't face. Oh, those poor guys. And here you've got the Republican, Ted Stevens from Alaska. Republican. He wants to make sure that the universal service rules that subsidize phone service in rural states are intact and protecting his constituents in Alaska. But I guarantee you, for the rest of the country, it's going to be sell us out. It's the same thing. It's just like with Walmart. This deal, now it's come out. Walmart breaking the child labor laws. Jonathan Tassini wrote this piece for TomPaine.com. After Walmart was found breaking the law on child labor, the government fined the company nearly a measly $135,000 and change and signed a deal with Walmart that says essentially, next time we want to investigate what laws you might be breaking, we're going to tell you about the investigation before we do it, just to give you enough time to cover your tracks, shred documents, or muddle a trail. You know, the only national media that I heard report on this yesterday, and I checked out a bunch of them, was Lou Dobbs. And he's a Republican. What is going on? As part of the deal with the government, the company signed a paper that says it denied any wrongdoing. The whole game is a hoax and charade, notes Tassini. This is not healthy. It's not healthy for our economy. It's not healthy for democracy. I mean, that's just the bottom line for me. The bottom line for me is it's not healthy for democracy. It's also not healthy for free enterprise, for people who do what I have done traditionally in my life, in addition to working in radio. I actually started one business with part of my paycheck working as a newscaster at WITL in Lansing, Michigan, back in the late 60s, early 70s. That was back when they actually had news departments in radio stations. Some still do. I actually had reporters. I used to every morning go down and get the police blotter and go to the state capitol building and interview the legislators and talk to the governor and interview the mayor, put together today's newscast. Anyway, here now we have one corporation, Choice Point, has collected information, 10 billion records on individuals and businesses in America, virtually all of us. They have contracts with 35 government agencies to sell this information. Now, here's the slick little way that the Bush administration gets around the privacy laws. They let private corporations do it for them. See, the privacy laws say that government can't snoop on you. See, the founders were afraid that government might get too big. The conservatives historically have been afraid that government might get too big and too powerful and snoop into our lives. And so we have the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, and we have a whole series of laws that have been passed over the years, saying there are limits to how much government can snoop into your lives. And the Bush administration figured out, and this is a relatively recent event, the Bush administration figured out that they could cut deals with private corporations. And they're doing the same thing, by the way, with these private contractors in Iraq, where they can get around the law. They can hire private corporations to do things that it is illegal for government to do. And then they can benefit from it. They can get the information. Choice Point contracts with 35 government agencies, including several law enforcement agencies. And now we discover over 50 fake companies have been set up, opened accounts at Choice Point, and have obtained huge chunks of databases, including your name, your address, your Social Security number, your credit reports, your credit card numbers. How did they find this out? In California, they discovered they were looking into an identity theft case, and it turned out that the identity thieves had gotten the information from Choice Point. So they're notifying folks in California. Why are they not notifying me here in Vermont? Well, because California is the only state in the union that has a law that says that if you're a private corporation and you've been gathering information on people and somebody has stolen that information, you have to inform the people that their identity has been put out in the marketplace, shall we say. It's the only state. Choice Point maintains a dossier on virtually every American consumer, according to Daniel J. Salovey, George Washington University professor and author of The Digital Person. Now, it's MSNBC.com, article by Bob Sullivan. Welcome to 1984, 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
America's attitude toward nuclear power is worlds away from that of some other countries. I'm Steve Pompa for Earthwatch Radio. Switzerland and Japan generate nearly 40% of their electricity from nuclear reactors. And last year, China announced plans to build 30 nuclear power plants in coming years. By comparison, the United States has virtually halted nuclear construction, relying on the technology for only 20% of its electricity. Michael Corradini is a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says many countries have turned toward nuclear energy because they have fewer resources than the United States does.
The international scene very much depends on that country's ability to get energy indigenous to its borders.
Corradini says Japan is an example. It has no energy resources such as coal or oil. Corradini says nuclear power also gives heavily populated developing countries a way to improve.
The most interesting thing are the developing nations, where they're trying to move up in economic status and standard of living. China's an example, Korea an example. And in all those cases, you see that nuclear power is really considered to be one, not the only, but one of the ways to do it.
Corradini contends that more nuclear power would help the U.S. cut its reliance on coal and natural gas, but the failure to effectively deal with nuclear waste is the main factor weighing against the technology.
If we continue to simply store it and not deal with it, it is not really addressing the thing that many people worry about, which is, if you produce waste in the form of spent fuel, are you starting to do something with it?
Japan, France, and other countries reprocess nuclear waste as a way to reduce it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell me you love Bucks Grill Street. Don't make me over.
Gennaro C. Armas, writing in the Associated Press. Shelters, soup kitchens, turning people away, study finds. Many homeless shelters and soup kitchens faced with more requests for emergency services are turning people away because they lack the beds, food, and money to meet the demand, says a survey from an advocacy group for low-income Americans. The report being released today by the National Student Campaign Against Hunger and Homelessness found a 28% rise last year in emergency food assistance requests and a 27% increase in requests for emergency shelter. The organization surveyed 900 agencies in 32 states. About one quarter of the emergency food providers said they had to turn away requests for food because of a lack of resources. Three quarters of emergency shelters providers reported turning away people for the same reason. Kathleen Barr, the report's author, said the Bush administration's 2006 budget proposals hurt many programs aimed at low-income Americans and could set back emergency assistance providers even further. At the same time, we have in today's, or maybe it's yesterday's, the progress report, Center for American Progress, David Kuo, K-U-O, the former deputy director of the President George W. Bush's faith-based and community initiatives, has decided to speak candidly about his experiences. His message? This administration doesn't care about the poor. In a piece published in BeliefNet yesterday, Kuo writes, quote, "From tax cuts to Medicare, the White House gets what the White House really wants. It never really wanted the poor people stuff." So how does the Bush administration respond to this? White House spokesman Trent Duffy notes, quote, "The president has mentioned the initiative in every State of the Union." So he's accused of talking and not doing, and the response, well, he's talked a lot. The White House ignored opportunities for the president to make good on his commitments. For example, Kuo writes that in 2001, former Senator Tom Daschle, Democrat from South Dakota, approached the White House with an offer to pass, a charity relief bill that contained many of the president's campaign tax incentive policies, plus new money for the widely popular and faith-based friendly social services block grant. The reaction, quote, "The White House Legislative Affairs Office rolled their eyes while others on senior staff yawned," end quote. The White House felt comfortable it could get away with this kind of behavior because there was no one to hold it accountable. As Kuo writes, again, this was the guy who was the deputy director of George W. Bush's faith-based community and community initiatives program. The White House, quote, "Drug addicts, alcoholics, poor moms, struggling urban social service organizations, and pastors aren't quite the NRA. So the Republicans really don't have to care about them. In fact, George Bush rolled out this program in his State of the Union address that his wife is going to run to help stop gangs. They're cutting money out of other programs to make it happen. It's tragic, my friends. Do something.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
To begin with, contact your elected officials and write a letter to the editor.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
New Jersey moved a step closer to approving its first minimum wage increase in 6 years on Monday. The state Senate voted 26-10 in favor of raising the wage from the federal minimum of $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The 10 dissenting votes were all cast by Republicans who are concerned that the increase will cost the state jobs. Senate Democrats argue that increasing the wage is the only way to help New Jersey's working poor make ends meet. The wage will jump to $6.15 per hour in October 2005, followed by a second increase in October 2006. The minimum wage bill was proposed by acting New Jersey Governor Richard J. Cody during his State of the State address.
Organized labor supporting Bush on Bush's air pollution legislation, that unlikely occurrence is happening. Bill Cunningham of Unions for Jobs and the Environment says a group of union presidents from the United Mine Workers, Teamsters, Boilermakers, Electrical Workers, Utility Workers, and the Transportation Communications International Union are calling on Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee to back the Bush plan because Cunningham says it's a reasonable reduction of air pollution while still protecting jobs.
We're supporting the bill because it calls for rather dramatic reductions in pollutants and creates jobs at the same time. I don't know if you say that's in support of the Bush administration. Well, maybe you might say that, but basically we're calling for some rather dramatic reductions and think that's the responsible thing to do.
Environmental groups oppose Bush's plan, which includes allowing power plants that pollute to buy pollution credits from plants that have reduced emissions further than required. The Senate committee is expected to act on Bush's air pollution bill today.
Striking workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York are meeting today to hear a new contract offer. The Bargaining Committee for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Lodge 588, met with Garlock officials on Monday. An IAM representative says they came out of the meeting without some of the concessions workers want, but enough to justify a contract revote. The workers rejected the latest offer because they were unhappy with an 80-cent per hour pay cut, changes in benefits, elimination of sick days, and work shifts that could change weekly. Garlock officials have threatened to close the plant if concessions aren't met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new report in the journal Child Development, a mother's work schedule may have a major impact on her child's developmental skills. Half the mothers studied worked full-time but odd hours, such as evening or rotating shifts. The children of those mothers tend to perform much worse than children of mothers who work traditional daytime hours. The study speculates that because women who work daytime hours are more likely to enroll their children in daycare, that could have a major impact on the developmental rift.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
In the swirl of statistics constantly spinning around us, here's one that caught my eye. The fifth leading cause of preventable disease and death in America is our medicines. Specifically, adverse reactions to prescription drugs are responsible for 100,000 deaths a year. This is but one of the startling findings in an important and easy-to-use book called Worst Pills, Best Pills, just published by the health research group of the consumer watchdog organization, Public Citizen. Pill by pill, this 900-page compilation profiles in plain English pluses and minuses of the medicines you or a loved one might be taking. There's been a lot of publicity recently about Vioxx, a heavily advertised, widely consumed arthritis drug that Merck & Company had to pull off the market because it was found to increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes. The industry rushed out to say that Vioxx is a rare exception to an otherwise perfectly safe plethora of pills on the market. Not. The health research group finds that 53 top-selling prescribed drugs, quote, should not be taken under any circumstances. It also lists 181 drugs under its Do Not Use category, ranging from antidepressants to toenail fungus drugs, offering safer alternatives to each. Besides the dangers of specific pills, the greater problem is that America has become massively overdosed. Thanks to pharmaceutical sales reps that hustle doctors to push their brands, and thanks to the surge of slick drug ads on TV, we have a national drug problem. Indeed, the book's researchers conclude that the greatest epidemic of drug abuse in American society is among those patients who are the victims of misprescribing or overprescribing. This is Jim Hightower saying, the good news is that each of us can do something about it. To find out more about Worst Pills, Best Pills, go to worstpills.org.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Now, tell me what's wrong with this picture. I'm gonna lay out here for you two scenarios. By the way, welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm gonna lay out for you two scenarios that are happening simultaneously. In our courts and, you know, through our legislative processes and in the news, they're both happening at the same time. And it is a juxtaposition that I think really identifies well for us. Perhaps. We'll see. May identify well for us the values of this administration. First of all, we have this story from the Los Angeles Times. I mean, it could be any newspaper. This is all over the place. As I said, this is just, it's in the news. The latest chapter, and this is by David G. Savage. The latest chapter in the legal history of torture is being written by American pilots who were beaten and abused by Iraqis during the 1991 Persian Gulf War. You remember this? During the 91 Gulf War, George Herbert Walker Bush's war, there were a couple of American pilots, my recollection is it was like six or eight of them, who were shot down over Iraq, were taken captive, were taken, ironically enough, to Abu Ghraib prison, and were they and tortured. And they went to court when they finally were freed. Saddam Hussein freed them. You know, a misplaced gesture of goodwill. Not misplaced, but I mean, you know, a failed attempt to prevent us from attacking him. I don't know, whatever the deal was. But in any case, they got out of there. They came back to the United States and they sued him for the torture and for the, yeah, I mean, some of them are permanently scarred as a result of this. All of them are certainly psychologically and physically scarred, but I mean, some of them are permanently disabled as a result of this. And a jury of their peers awarded them a pile of money. Now, certainly some of it went to those nasty trial lawyers that litigated this thing on a percentage basis, as trial lawyers are wont to do. And, you know, a fair amount of it went to cover the costs of getting testimony and all, you know, the whole song and dance. I mean, it cost a lot of money to, but still, there's a pile of money here. On July 7th, 2003, the judge handed down a long opinion that described the abuse suffered by the Gulf War POWs and awarded them $653 million in compensatory damages and $306 million in punitive damages against Iraq. And now we were holding more than, now that's almost $1 billion. We were holding more than that in Iraqi frozen assets. And so they said, hey, United States government, unfreeze those assets and pay them to these heroes of the Gulf War who were tortured. Now, the Bush administration has just gone to court to say that these soldiers, these airmen, these pilots, should not be paid any of that money. Here's the quote. The Bush administration is fighting the former prisoners of war in court, trying to prevent them from collecting nearly $1 billion from Iraq that a federal judge awarded them as compensation for their torture at the hands of Saddam Hussein's regime. The rationale? Today's Iraqis are the good guys, and they need the money. You get this? Government lawyers have insisted literally on, quote, no amount of money, end quote, going to the Gulf War POWs. As Scotty McClellan, the White House press secretary, who, according to some reports, well, we won't go into that. Anyhow, as Scotty McClellan said, these resources are required for the urgent national security needs of rebuilding Iraq. Now, here's half of the juxtaposition. While we're saying to the Americans who were tortured by Saddam, sorry, you can't lay claim against Iraq. Don Rumsfeld told the Senate, quote, I am seeking a way to provide appropriate compensation to those detainees who suffered grievous and brutal abuse and cruelty at the hands of a few members of the U.S. military. It is the right thing to do. In other words, Rumsfeld wants us to pay compensation to the people in Abu Ghraib that we tortured. But our guys who were tortured by Saddam, Rumsfeld and Bush say, eh, they're entitled to nothing. Sorry, we need that money to rebuild Iraq. The final sentence of the article, this week, Justice Department lawyers are expected to file a brief urging the Supreme Court to turn away the appeal. The last hope of these POWs rests with the Supreme Court. Now, that's half the story. Here's the other half. This is an article by Evelyn Pringle. It was published on BuzzFlash. After millions of tax dollars were spent investigating how Halliburton ended up being awarded billions of dollars worth of no-bid contracts in Iraq, the Government Accounting Office determined that the company should never have been awarded the contracts in the first place. In response to those findings, Bush and Cheney both as much as thumbed their noses at America's taxpayers as if to say, so what? What are you going to do about it? And it's beginning to look as if they're right. There's nothing we can do about it, at least as long as the Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the White House. The GAO found that the Bush administration violated procurement law when it issued various task orders under existing contracts. Of the 11 task orders examined, more than half were awarded outside the scope of their contracts, according to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office. This is a nonpartisan, you know, this is the GAO told how, quote, a military review board approved a six-month renewal contract with Halliburton worth $587 million in just 10 minutes and based on only 6 pages of documentation, end quote. Now, you got a situation where Cheney is on NBC's Meet the Press. He says, and as vice president, I have absolutely no influence of, involvement of, knowledge in of any way, shape, or form the contracts led by the Corps of Engineers or anybody else in the federal government. Turns out it was a lie. Turns out it was a lie. Time Magazine, June 2004. Article, the paper trail. Did Cheney okay a deal? Bush and Cheney both were informed that Halliburton would get the contract before it was awarded. Time quoted an email sent by the Army Corps of Engineers that said the contract for the construction of oil pipelines was approved by Undersecretary of Defense Douglas Feith. Now, I want you to remember that name. Contingent on informing the White House tomorrow. This, I'm quoting from the email. We anticipate no issues since action has been coordinated with the Vice President's office. End of quote. Dick Cheney, I mean, you know, there's no, I guess it's not against the law for the vice president to lie to the American people on Meet the Press. On June 14th, 2004, the LA Times, quote, the Pentagon admitted that a $7 billion no-bid contract to extinguish oil fires in Iraq was awarded to Halliburton after a political appointee from the Bush administration recommended the company for the job. The political appointee was Michael Mobbs, a special assistant to Undersecretary of Defense Douglas Feith. Now, here's how this scam works. And I'm telling you, Dick Cheney, back when he was defense secretary under the first President Bush, really turned this into an art form. And he did it for Halliburton, specifically. And then after he left office as defense secretary under the first Bush, Halliburton hired him as its CEO, and he made tens of millions of dollars, and he's still drawing a salary from Halliburton, deferred compensation, they call it, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and he still has millions of dollars worth of Halliburton stock. And you say, oh, he's got no connection. But the deal was, back when, under the first George Bush, Cheney said, you know, we need to hire a company to find out what needs to be done when we invade Kuwait and throw out the Iraqis if, you know, there's oil fires, oil fields, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, we need to hire a company to find out what's going to be done. So let's hire Halliburton. We'll give them a bunch of money, and they'll tell us what needs to be done. And sure enough, Halliburton came back and said, well, here's what needs to be done, and by the way, we're the ones to do it. And they got hired. And all of a sudden, Halliburton went from losing money to making money. Well, they were losing, they lost money the year before Bush and Cheney became vice president and president. And they made money the next year, just in 2000, 2001.
Surprise, surprise,
as Gomer would say. Yeah, but in November of 2002, this is before the war began, Mobbs, again, this is Doug Feith's assistant, political appointee. This is not a bureaucrat. You see, back in August of 2002, Wendy Hall, the Halliburton spokeswoman, she says, company's military contracts are awarded not by politicians, but by government civil servants under strict guidelines. Yes, Republican Committee Chairman Tom Davis of the Government Reform Committee has six senior officials of the CPA and the DOD, Coalition Provisional Authority and the Department of Defense. Quote, I want to get this on the record. Everybody's under oath. Have you or anyone in this office ever discussed with the vice president or with his office the award of a contract for Iraqi reconstruction prior to any contract being awarded? End quote. Every one of those six people said, no, sir. They all lied under oath before Congress, apparently. If the emails of Dick Cheney's assistants are to be believed, or Doug Feith's. So in November 2002, long before the war began, a Pentagon group led by Mobbs, decided to pay Halliburton $1.9 million to develop a secret contingency plan for handling the Iraqi oil industry. Taxpayers need to understand this initial task order was to develop a plan. That plan led to Halliburton being awarded a $7 billion oil infrastructure contract. This is the same thing that he did before. Mobbs even acknowledged in a memo that the $1.9 million task order would uniquely position Halliburton to win the far larger sole source contract. Right? I mean, they're just right up front about it internally. I mean, in their internal emails. And those attending the meeting included Cheney's chief of staff, Louis Libby, who, by the way, yesterday, that reporter for Time magazine who's going to be sent off to prison if he doesn't reveal his sources, yesterday on, I believe it was CNN, might have been MSNBC, he said, you know, one of his sources for the Valerie Plame leak was Scooter Libby, right? You recall that.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Looks like it might have been the vice president who committed treason. Well, the story continues. I'll wrap it up right after this. 20 minutes after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house,
Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball,
to tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
My bills are all due, and the babies need shoes, but I'm busted.
Yeah, well, you're not Dick Cheney, then.
Cotton is down to a quarter a pound, and I'm busted.
Or a Mr. Mob, or Mr. Libby, or Mr. Hadley.
I got a cow that went dry, and a hen that won't lay. A big stack of bills that get bigger each day. The county will haul my belongings away. I'm busted.
You're not Stephen Browning or Jay Garner or Doug Feith. So Henry Waxman gets into this act. The congressman, right? The crusading congressman from California, Henry Waxman. He gets into this act, and he writes a letter to Dick Cheney. This is after Mob has been briefed, and you got Cheney's top dog, Libby, and you got Rice's second-in-command, Hadley, White House staff members, political appointees, all these folks involved in making sure Halliburton's getting all his money. Waxman sends him a letter, says, quote, this is to Cheney, these new disclosures appear to contradict your assertions that you were not informed about the Halliburton contracts. They also seem to contradict the administration's repeated assertions that political appointees were not involved in the award of the contracts to Halliburton. And in fact, he points out that Stephen Browning, the guy who wrote the email that kind of blew this thing open, said in an interview that he wrote the memo after he and retired Lieutenant General Jay Garner, who you will often see on TV, met with Doug Feith about plans to declassify the earlier $1.8 million contract with Halliburton. 3 days later, Halliburton got the $7 billion contract. When Waxman tried to investigate the matter further, Cheney simply refused to respond to a request for any records or any communications he and his staff had with Halliburton or any actions they took on any contracts. So finally, in October 2004, Bonatine Greenhouse, a top official response, this is, now you got a real bureaucrat, somebody who's actually, you know, civil servant, responsible for making sure the Army Corps of Engineers complies with contracting rules. She comes forward and reveals that top Pentagon officials showed improper favoritism to Halliburton. She says she was pressured to withdraw her objections to this $7 billion sweetheart deal for Halliburton. This is reported in Time magazine. She also said the Army altered documents in order to justify the company's contract work in the Balkans. As Evelyn Pringle points out in BuzzFlash, the media chased after that dumb 20-year Whitewater story for 8 years. To this day, I can't still tell you, I still don't know what it was about. But we know they didn't make billions off you and me, or off a war. Where's the mainstream media in this? Where is Congress in this? And you know, on the one side, we're saying to our veterans, sorry, guys, you can't have any money. On the other side, we're saying to Halliburton, take all you want. John in Shreveport, Louisiana, on the line, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, what's up?
Good question. I got a question for you. I just want your opinion about when it comes to, like, racial justice. What's your opinion of Charles Rangel using the word redneck?
I don't know. What's the, you always call with these tests, John. What's the correct answer to the test?
It's not a test. I just want your opinion. Sometimes I just want your opinion. Sometimes I just like your view. Sometimes I just I got a question. I just want to answer. But to me,
well,
you haven't heard about it. You can't comment on it.
You know, no, I haven't heard about it. I can tell you I lived in Georgia for 16, 17 years. And
what does that prove?
And redneck is in the South. In the redneck, the word redneck is sometimes used as a negative and sometimes it's used as a compliment. And so I would say anybody's use of it would depend on the context.
On the context. Okay, well, that's fair enough. That's fair enough reason. I'm going to investigate further and I'll maybe let you know anything further later.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot, John. Color me baffled. Color me baffled. If Charlie Rangel's calling somebody a redneck, well, you know, Charlie Rangel's a pretty good guy, in my opinion. I got to tell you, I have a lot of respect for Charles Rangel. He's one of the smartest men in the United States House of Representatives. And there are some very competent and very intelligent people in the House of Representatives. But Charlie Rangel's right up there. So, and it's possible he put his foot in his mouth. Who knows? But. No doubt, this is something. It just dawned on me. It's got to be. This is the right wing radio hysterical. Let's talk about this so we can avoid talking about Halliburton and about what's really going on in Iraq and the crimes of this administration. Let's talk about Charlie Rangel. 29 minutes past the hour.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
New Jersey moved a step closer to approving its first minimum wage increase in 6 years on Monday. The state Senate voted 26-10 in favor of raising the wage from the federal minimum of $5.15 per hour to $7.15 per hour. The 10 dissenting votes were all cast by Republicans who are concerned that the increase will cost the state jobs. Senate Democrats argue that increasing the wage is the only way to help New Jersey's working poor make ends meet. The wage will jump to $6.15 per hour in October 2005, followed by a second increase in October 2006. The minimum wage bill was proposed by acting New Jersey Governor Richard J. Cody during his State of the State address.
Organized labor supporting Bush on Bush's air pollution legislation, that unlikely occurrence is happening. Bill Cunningham of Unions for Jobs and the Environment says a group of union presidents from the United Mine Workers, Teamsters, Boilermakers, Electrical Workers, Utility Workers, and the Transportation Communications International Union are calling on Democrats on the Senate Environment Committee to back the Bush plan because, Cunningham says, it's a reasonable reduction of air pollution while still protecting jobs.
We're supporting the bill because it calls for rather dramatic reductions in pollutants and creates jobs at the same time. I don't know if you say that's in support of the Bush administration. Well, maybe you might say that, but basically we're calling for some rather dramatic reductions and think that's the responsible thing to do.
Environmental groups oppose Bush's plan, which includes allowing power plants that pollute to buy pollution credits from plants that have reduced emissions further than required. The Senate committee is expected to act on Bush's air pollution bill today.
Striking workers at Garlock Sealing Technologies in New York are meeting today to hear a new contract offer. The Bargaining Committee for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Lodge 588, met with Garlock officials on Monday. An IAM representative says they came out of the meeting without some of the concessions workers want, but enough to justify a contract revote. The workers rejected the latest offer because they were unhappy with an 80-cent per hour pay cut, changes in benefits, elimination of sick days, and work shifts that could change weekly. Garlock officials have threatened to close the plant if concessions aren't met. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to a new report in the journal Child Development, a mother's work schedule may have a major impact on her child's developmental skills. Half the mothers studied worked full-time but odd hours, such as evening or rotating shifts. The children of those mothers tend to perform much worse than children of mothers who work traditional daytime hours. The study speculates that because women who work daytime hours are more likely to enroll their children in daycare, that could have a major impact on the developmental rift.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
So, what's great music?
See the girl with the red dress on. She can birdland all night long. All right.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
All right.
I love it. Welcome back. Some of this great bumper music. Yes, indeed. Hey, you guys. I'm sorry. Every now and then, the old DJ in me just pops back out again, and I just have to say, get back down in there! Yes.
Tell your mama, I'm going to send you back to Arkansas. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no! Welcome back. Maybe that had to do with John's comment. We'll find out. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in. If you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. You'd also like to share with your thoughts with the folks in our chat room. TomHartman.com will get you over there. Gloria in Louisiana is on the line. Hey, Gloria, perhaps you can enlighten us about what's going on.
Well, hi.
Hi.
Mr. Hartman, I just wanted to know if you have heard of a book and have you read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins.
I have read the book. I know John Perkins, and I had him on this program about a month ago.
Okay, well, I must have missed that because I spend half my time listening to C-SPAN.
Yeah. Oh,
and
that's,
then the
that's
other
good
half
stuff, too.
Kind of listening to you all because I work at home.
Uh-huh.
But I just wanted to check and see if you were aware and if you were part of the folks getting the word out.
Yeah. You know, John has done a good job in some ways, mm-hmm. you know, in that the book is kind of dramatic. You know, it makes the whole story, I think, real for the average person. There's a much larger picture that is mm-hmm. largely left out of John's book, which you find in books like David Corton's book, When Corporations Rule the World, or William Grider's book, One World Ready or Not, I believe was the title of it. Of really, I mean, you know, what John Perkins was writing about is like this little tiny piece
of a
great big
machine. And I would kind of submit that what has been done in some of these foreign countries is it's beginning to be done to us here in the United States now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with the sending of jobs overseas being outsourced and also with the pressure from illegal workers forcing down wages and, you know, I think workers beginning to lose rights in favor of the corporations and that type of thing.
It's not just beginning to happen. It's been slowly kind of creeping along since 1947.
It's accelerated to you now, like it's on a faster track.
Yeah, it really started in 1947 when the Republicans took the House and the Senate.
Right.
They were able to override Harry Truman's veto of the Taft-Hartley Act.
Right.
And it has exploded now since Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
So.
Exactly. Okay. Well, that was all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you, Gloria. Thank you for raising
that.
Perhaps, in fact, odds are many of our listeners hadn't heard of the book, and now they'll go out and get it and check it out on our recommendation.
That was my purpose.
Okay.
Thank you. Well done.
Bye-bye. Have a good one. I do appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. George Bush, a big Republican donor, goes to his governor and senator saying he was told by President Bush's chief fundraiser he'd be getting a plum ambassadorial appointment, but it wasn't delivered. This from the Associated Press, article by Sharon Thimer. The senator takes his case right to the top of the White House. This guy raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for George W. Bush. He's the owner of the Crete Carrier Corporation, a major trucking company. And he said he wanted to be an ambassador or he wanted to have a job. Let's see, I've got his letters here. His Dear Mike letter. My only interest if I'm going to serve would be in serving as an ambassador or in a position involving trade. And somehow they overlooked him, even though he had raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for Bush. And so Chuck Hagel gets involved. Chuck Hagel, a Republican from Nebraska. I'm guessing this guy is in Nebraska. Yep. Chuck Hagel gets involved, and he writes a letter to the president, talks on the phone with Andy Card, personnel director Clay Johnson, and Karl Rove, trying to get this guy, Ackley, an appointment. And finally he does. He gets his gig. He gets his job. Now, the Associated Press notes, federal bribery laws prohibit public officials from directly promising a government action in return for donations or fundraising help. Yes. However, it should be noted, Ackley helped organize a $400,000 Omaha fundraiser headlined by Vice President Dick Cheney in July 2003 and was on his way to becoming a Ranger, an honorary campaign title bestowed on those who raised $200,000 or more for Bush. Last year, Ackley also became a Super Ranger, bestowing at least $300,000 for the RNC. Now, I got to say, this is nothing new. I know where it is on this clip of Jack Kennedy. Let me just see if I've got the right spot.
Not merely people who made a political contribution, but who could speak the...
Yeah, there we go. Here, let me back it up just a little bit. This is Jack Kennedy in 1960 in his debate with Richard Nixon, pointing out how the Nixon-Eisenhower administration had been giving campaign donors positions as ambassadors, and he thought it was a bad idea.
And then throughout the world, appoint the best people we can get, ambassadors who can speak the language, not merely people who made a political contribution, but who can speak the language. I believe that this party, Republican Party, has stood still really for 25 years, its leadership has. It opposed all of the programs for President Roosevelt and others, for minimum wage and for housing, economic growth, and development of our natural resources, the Tennessee Valley.
And he goes on and on. But there's that key there where he says...
And then throughout the world, appoint the best people we can get, ambassadors who can speak the language, not merely people who made a political contribution, but who can speak the language.
That's the key. Okay. Well, you know, to be fair... Bill Clinton picked five of his $100,000-plus Democratic donors to be ambassadors in his first year in office. And George Bush, of course, you know, can't allow Bill Clinton to outdo him, so Bush picked two dozen of his 2,000 pioneers, $100,000-plus fundraisers, or their spouses to be ambassadors. So what's wrong with this picture? I ask you, what is wrong with this picture? I, you know, what, haven't we learned anything? Jack Kennedy talking about this in 1960, it's still going on. What is wrong with this picture? What? It is time for us to take back this nation. I'm telling you, it is not going to happen. As long as people are lulled to sleep by, you know, petty little arguments about whether or not gays should be allowed to marry, as if that's the biggest deal facing America. We're talking about the selling off of ambassadorships, the absolute evisceration, the disemboweling of the American middle class, wiping out the American middle class. You know, spilling their guts on the floor. The rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer, the destruction of social welfare programs, the possible destruction of Social Security, running this country into bankruptcy so that George W. Bush can borrow trillions from our children and grandchildren and give it to his wealthy buddies and call it tax breaks. In fact, it's nothing of the kind. It's a loan from future generations to the wealthy present. And we're worried about whether a couple of gay people can get married. I'm telling you. If we don't wake up and realize that there are real issues, or whether Charlie Rangel used the word redneck, or what Michael Jackson's been up to, I'm not saying that, you know, these things shouldn't be, you know, that Michael, you know, if he committed a crime, let him be prosecuted. But I'd like to see some real news in the news as well. Thank you very much. And if you and I don't start saying to our media, and to our politicians, we are going to hold you accountable. We want to know what's really going on. We would like to see some genuine investigative reporting. Stop being afraid of the right-wingers over at Fox News and these right-wing goon squads who go after, you know, who issue all the press. Oh, it's there's liberal bias in the media. There it is again. Stop being so terrified of these folks and just start telling the truth, please. Even when it hurts. This country needs to know what's going on with our politicians. It's the political realities in this nation. Well, I'm getting redundant and I'm getting preachy, and neither one of those things are useful in talk radio, so we will move along. Yarmila in Eureka, California on the line, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Hey, Yarmila. Oh, I'm sorry. That is Terry in Minnesota is on that line. I punched the wrong button. Hey, Terry, you're live. Miller will be doing? Next. I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. I just called in. The first time caller, I just got turned onto your show on the internet, and it's a great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to mention that, once again, the top economic advisor is resigning from the cabinet.
Yeah.
And I'd like to ask everybody to think back and ask themselves, when was the first time that we've had a complete economic team in place in this cabinet?
Well, it's never happened
for an extended period of time.
Yeah, see the problem. I mean, Clinton was able to pull together an economic team that worked together because they had a coherent worldview. They had a vision of how to make this country, you know, of how to create surpluses, how to put people back to work, how to make things work. I mean, I have, as you all know, I have a lot of disagreements with Bill Clinton. NAFTA, GATT, Telecommunications Act, I think he sold the country out in a lot of ways. But in terms of fiscal responsibility in domestic politics, they did a pretty good job. Robert Reich and Rubin, these guys were great. They were solid. But during the Reagan administration and during the George W. Bush administration, you've got right-wing ideologues who believe in supply-side economics that make absolutely no sense, and they can't keep real economists on their staffs because these people look around and go, this is nuts! This is nuts!
It lets you know where their priorities are, that's for sure.
Yeah, it really does. It really
and
does.
Another thing, this little spat between Syria and Iran and us.
Yeah.
I hope that our administration isn't tinkering in Lebanon and Beirut, because if they're trying to set something up with Syria or something like that, Iran and Syria combined could probably push us right out of Iraq.
It's
and that would be a very, very sad day for this whole affair.
Yeah.
It'd be like the cherry on the top of a very, very bad situation, unfortunately.
Or it could be the Archduke in Sarajevo incident. I mean, you know, remember World War One was started because the Archduke Ferdinand was in Sarajevo and got assassinated. And it was like a war that nobody could figure out why we're fighting this war. It was because one country felt insulted by another country, and so they declared war. And then other countries had treaty obligations with that country that said that somebody declares war on you, they declared war on us, and then other countries with other countries, and boom, all of a sudden you've got the world at war. Look at a map. Look at who is on, you know, Afghanistan is, you look at the map, and to the right of Iran is Afghanistan, and to the left of Iran is Iraq. And then
right.
to the left of Iraq is Syria. And you just draw a straight line right across the middle. It's like Syria is California, and Iraq is like Nevada or the Midwest, and, you know, larger, actually, than little tiny Syria. Or let's say the Rocky Mountain states, that's Iraq. Iran is like the entire Midwest. It's much larger than Iraq. And then Afghanistan is the little Northeast, you know, there you go. And this is a part of the world that we have stepped into, and we've got a whole lot more than just gum on our shoe here, let's hope it doesn't get a lot worse.
And Terry, as far as Charlie Rangel goes, I don't know what your policy is for vulgarity on your show, but
I would appreciate it if you didn't use vulgarity.
Right.
On your show.
Well, maybe he should have just called him by a different name that didn't generalize.
Okay.
Okay.
All righty. We'll take that. Terry, thanks a lot for the call.
All right. Have a good day.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Yarmila, I'm sorry I pushed the wrong button before. You were actually first in line. What's up?
Good morning, Tom. I just have a little remark about Michael Chertoff, since he became head of Homeland Department.
Yes, with a 98-0 vote, which surprised me, frankly.
And because we have that right hand of God in the White House, I want to say that Chertoff is a Russian name, and exact meaning of it is belongs to devil.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
What is the origin of his name?
Chertoff. The base of the name is
In what language?
Russian.
In Russian.
It is Chert is in a Russian language devil.
Uh huh.
And Chertoff, it is same thing if you would use English devil and devils.
Oh, that's Yarmila, do you speak Russian?
Yes.
Ah, Strasvidya. My daughter speaks Russian. She studied in Simferopol for a year in the Ukraine. She speaks Ukrainian as well. Interesting. Okay. Well, I had no idea. So the descendant of the devil was just, my goodness, that's spooky. That is spooky. That's like back in the days when they said... I remember there was a lot of people very concerned when Reagan and Gorbachev first got together, because Gorbachev had that horn birthmark on his forehead, and Ronald Wilson Reagan has six letters in each one of his three names, 666 Ronald Wilson Reagan. And it was like 666 and the Beast together? Uh-oh. You know, it's interesting stuff. I'm more concerned, frankly, with the guy's policy on torture and the fact that he was so involved in it. I'm surprised that nobody in the Senate, even Barbara Boxer, didn't vote against him, but... Well, time will tell. Yarmila, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Roy in Rio Rancho's on the line. Hey, Roy, we got about a minute left. What's up?
Hi, Tom. The redneck comment. Charlie Rangel was on C-SPAN the other morning, and he was actually just talking about why Bill Clinton was so effective at bringing people together.
Uh-huh.
And he used it as a compliment, if you will. He was born in Arkansas, did this, did that, went to Oxford, Rhodes Scholar, et cetera, et cetera. But deep down, he was always a redneck.
Oh, well, if Charlie Rangel's saying that about Bill Clinton, he's
definitely a compliment. And it was as a mark of honor.
Yeah, interesting. Roy, thanks for the tip. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Tuesday marked the fifth anniversary of low-power FM radio's existence, and the Federal Communications Commission heard from advocates of micro radio, making good on a promise to consider the low-power community broadcaster's contribution to the media landscape. DC Radio Co-op Selena Masuta was at the FCC.
Low-power FM truly represents a unique opportunity to give new voice to old communities. And so it really holds a special place in our heart here at the Federal Communications Commission.
That was outgoing FCC Chairperson Michael Powell addressing hundreds of low-power FM advocates. Low-power FM is community-based, non-commercial radio stations that cover about a 3 to 7 mile radius. LPFM broadcasters say that their operations are being hindered by FCC and congressional rulings. Some LPFM broadcasters have waited as long as 5 years to receive confirmation for their licenses and travel to D.C. to urge the action. Some of what people like Anthony Mazza with Prometheus Radio and LPFM Advocacy Group are asking the FCC includes opening the door for more LPFM stations to be formed, especially after proving that the creation of these stations would not affect the signal of commercial stations.
The FCC is waiting for word from Congress that they can move forward on their original vision. It's the opinion of a lot of low-power stations and Prometheus Radio that the FCC can do things on their own without waiting for an okay from Congress.
Lucas Benitez of Immokalee, Florida, spoke at the FCC hearing. Benitez's radio station has become the gathering point for Immokalee's mostly immigrant farm-working community.
In Immokalee, we have the indigenous people from Mexico, from Guatemala, and the first languages is Cancobal, Mam, Quiche, Toxil from Mexico. So we have people in the radio programs that give this programs in their own language.
For Workers Independent News, I am Selena Masuda, reporting from Washington, D.C.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by, don't swallow their lies. Don't stand by till we lose the prize. You've got to open your eyes.
There you go. Open your eyes. Here, I just want to wrap up by just pointing out a few things. Number one, Iran and Syria. Yeah, we've been saber-rattling with both these countries. They have just said that they are going to form a common front to face challenges and threats. As I said, this concerns me. This sounds very much like a lot of the alliances that were being constructed just prior to World War I. And Damascus regarded its military presence in Lebanon, they say, as a stabilizing factor. This is from MSNBC. And said, quote, "We would be happy to withdraw the troops if the Lebanese government asked Syria to do so." So yet, you know, we're sort of essentially saying, well, how dare they have troops in there? In fact, in today's Wall Street Journal, Neil King writes, "The U.S. cracks down on Syria in wake of Hariri's death, or Hariri's death. The Bush administration recalled its ambassador to Syria." I'm sure you've heard that news. But here's where it gets more interesting. "The triumph of a Shiite Muslim slate in Iraq's national elections is a victory for one of the nation's most enigmatic figures and consistent critic of U.S. policy, senior cleric Abdelaziz Hakim." Now, who is Hakim? Hakim is the big winner in the elections. First of all, let's keep in mind, the elections that were just held in Iraq were not the idea of the Bush administration. The Bush administration did not want to have elections. Sistani and Sadr went into the streets and demanded elections. We were going to have caucuses of handpicked American-approved people who would get together and they would hold caucuses and they would decide on who the government was going to be. And Sistani and Sadr said, no, ain't going to happen. We're going to have democratic elections. And they forced the Bush administration to have those elections against their will. Now, who won? The main leader was the Supreme Council of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. So the various Shiite groups. Okay, it's the most powerful party of the United Iraqi Alliance slate. It's called the Supreme Council of the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. Now, here's what's really interesting. If you go to IraqNews.com, there's a website that's been there for quite some time, and you look at the details for this group, the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, platform. Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq is the main vehicle for Shia opposition to Saddam Hussein, with cells operating secretly in southern Iraq. It has approximately 8,000 guerrilla fighters. Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq seems to welcome outside military intervention to topple Saddam Hussein's regime. Okay, so they've got 8,000 guerrilla fighters, and they were opposed to Hussein, led by Hakim. Funded by Iran. History. Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq was established in 1982 with the support of Iran. The group incorporates representatives from the Turkish Hezbollah, or from the Kurdish Hezbollah, and the Islamic Task Organization. From its inception, it has purported to represent all the Muslims of Iraq, including the Sunnis, and has portrayed Iran as the foundation of the World Islamic Revolution. The World Islamic Revolution. These guys see themselves as the headquarters for it. In fact, they opposed the 1991 U.S.-led Gulf War, claiming that the invasion of Kuwait was a pretext for aggression against the Iraqi people, and called on Iraqis to confront the United States as the aggressors in 1991. These are the guys who just won. Ah, yes.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are